So we do have a winner already for tonight, and we'll have another winner shortly. But now it's time to move the conversation onto what would have been a very entertaining weekend of rugby if you did watch it. John Robbie joins me on the line now. John, thank you so much for your time this evening. Welcome to Sports Talk.
Brilliant being here. How can you ever question who's the favorite underdog? Japan is the whole world's favorite underdog. So I can tell you now, I predict 10 to 1 on that will be the answer. Weren't they fabulous?
They were amazing, John Robbie. I mean, and for you to say that, being an Irishman, your beloved country losing 19-12 to the Japs, I mean, they really are that a banana skin in the World Cup they're proving to be.
Well, I'm a South African, actually, of Irish descent. But remember, I was there in Brighton 4 years ago when Japan deserved to beat South Africa. And my son Johnny and I were cheering the Japanese at the end, and we bowed them off the field because they deserved to win, and Japan deserved to beat Ireland. I'm less tribal when I think it comes to a sport these days. You know, I tend to go for the side that deserves to win. And it wasn't just luck, the Japanese. They had sorted out, they had planned, they executed. The speed they played at and the thought that went into it was absolutely fantastic. And the extraordinary thing is that if they can keep it up, they've still got two tough games to go, remember? Samoa and Scotland. Before the World Cup, you'd have thought those would be very, very tough games. But if they win and play the way they're doing, we could end up coming second in the group and playing against Japan. And I don't think we'd really mind that.
That would be quite something if Japan goes all the way through to the knockout stages, John Robbie. Samoa and Scotland, all of a sudden, and I mean, not really all of a sudden, they would have known Japan wouldn't be easy to beat, it being their home ground and all. But they will be, you know, taking a bit more note now.
Absolutely. We smashed Japan, if you remember, in that warm-up game.
Yeah.
And I think that's what most people thought that Japan was. But, you know, you can see it, as you say, home ground advantage. Plus, they've got a New Zealand coach, two New Zealand coaches. And they've been building up very, very nicely indeed. And the style of rugby was terrific. There was no point in just booting it up in the air and chasing it. They moved it, they ran, they spread the ball about. Their speed of passing was fantastic. And to see them run in that overlap in such a short space and put their winger in for that winning try was magnificent. I don't think we could have done that, and that's saying something.
Do you think it is maybe because of the conditions that Japan had were able to put to get the better of Ireland?
No, I don't think it was conditions at all. I think it was just building up for that big game, and they were terrific. And quite rightly, the world is paying tribute to them. And, you know, I've just been in contact with some people who are over there in Japan, and it has lit up the country. You know, there was always this sort of politeness about hosting the World Cup and we'll turn up. But now suddenly non-rugby people are saying, hey, for goodness sake, we've done something incredible. And it's wonderful to see that upsets can still happen.
It's absolutely fantastic to see. John Robbie, Springboks 57, Namibia 3, no surprise there.
I thought we were rubbish. I've listened to people trying to suck some positives out of it. First of all, the Namibians didn't even play their strongest side. If you remember, we went through the likely players when we spoke before. It was before the Namibian side was selected. And some of their top players were left out. And looking at the television and various people, of course we smashed them. I mean, whatever it was, 57-3 or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that was more or less, I think that I went for sort of 20-something at halftime. And, you know, we knew that was going to happen. We were never going to lose the game. But the way we played, I thought, was sloppy. I thought it looked careless. It didn't look planned. It was almost like we didn't know whether we were going to simply use the very conservative tactics we use when we play the All Blacks or England or whatever, or we were going to cut loose. And I keep hearing these detailed explanations about running patterns and about defensive patterns and pods running forward and setting things up so they can come back, etc. But when I see then Skalk Brits, at 38 years of age, a hooker come number 8, and every time he gets the ball, he seems to be able to open up all these wonderful planned defenses with simply straightening or putting his arms through and putting somebody away. You've got to say, with so much supposed skill we have in our country, so much emphasis on coaching, etc., where was the rest of it? Where was the rest of it? I thought we were appalled. appalling in the game, and that we couldn't score, what, in the last 20 minutes, I think it was, according to Nick Mallett, the All Blacks would have put 100 on them. Mm. And it doesn't matter when you play. When you play against these big boys, and I understand the arguments about the kick and the chase and the coming up and the rolling and all this, because times are so, you've got this overall plan, which is not pretty, but it's going to be effective. But at some stage in every World Cup, you'll get your chance. A chance to run in an overlap. A chance to attack from the back. A chance where, I don't know, somebody pulls a hamstring in this defensive line and there's a gap there. And surely these are the sort of games where we should be running flat out and going mad and running them apart. For goodness sake, we've got so much speed on the outside, so much talent at fullback, that we should have torn them apart. I watched that game, and I'm ashamed to say that at times I was actually ashamed of the Springboks. Mm. Even the commentators at times were trying to come up, trying to talk the Springboks up. Mm. I thought they were absolutely rubbish. And the look on Rassie's face afterwards when he was talking about how certain things were good, I think he was disappointed and furious. But having said that, it's a win, and it'll be forgotten by next week.
No, it will definitely be forgotten by next week, John Robbie. But a case of a missed opportunity for some players, the likes of Elton Yankees in this one.
I thought Elton Yankees was awful. And I keep saying it. You know, people are now stopping me in the street and saying, "What have you got to get at Elton Yankees?" It's because I was such a fan of Elton Yankees that I'm so disappointed when he plays like that. Mm. He looked like he wasn't really interested. And yet, having said that, he smashed over the kicks. And he did a couple of nice things, but there was an awful lot of bad stuff as well. Warwick Gallant also, I was a little bit disappointed. And he took his try very well, but I thought that was an obvious chance for him to really step up. And you did notice, remember I said once, I thought his top-end speed wasn't good enough. He was caught from behind at one stage when he should really have scored. But our wings were okay. Frank Steyn looked all right, but gee, he looked, he looks like that extra pace has gone. Nathaniel Ham looked our best player at he wasn't. Our best player, I mean, I know Luit Piyaka played with great heart and everything, but Scott Brits was our best player by 10 million miles. And how he didn't get the man of the match, because every time he touched the ball, he opened it up. Yeah. And funnily enough, I've been looking at this Supersport program where they do this in-depth analysis with their Swayster Brain and Nick Mallett, and it's really high-powered stuff. And it's fascinating to look at. And a lot of the work that Scott Brits was doing off the ball as well.
Yeah.
The lines of running where you push that line between obstruction and also opening up a gap. I mean, I found that very, very interesting. And apparently that's something the world has learned from the All Blacks. So when I looked at that program, coupled with what I saw in that game, Scott Brits was absolutely, absolutely magnificent. And to do it at 38 was fabulous.
I mean, you mentioned Scott Brits, John Robbie. You can just see he is loving his rugby. He's not playing with any pressure. To him, it's just a matter of go out there and enjoy yourself.
This is his pension. I remember the game after, everyone forgets, the game after Brighton 4 years ago, we played Samoa at Villa Park in Birmingham, and Samoa were a much better side than they are now.
Yeah.
And we smashed them. We really smashed them. It was a terrific, terrific performance.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, I was down on the edge of the field with my son, and Scout came over. He came over to see, and we had a long, long chat. And he said to me, "I can't believe it. I'm playing in this World Cup at 34 years of age. And here we are 4 years later, and he's doing it again." So, yeah, fair play to him. And he could not meet a nicer guy.
Evergreen Skulk. So we're going to be looking forward to Italy now, John. But we're not going to talk too much on that. We will have the Sports Talk special podcast and another episode during the week that's going to come out of that. But just a quick summation of where to from here for South Africa.
Well, I mean, right at the beginning, we said when everybody was focusing, because the dream game of the first round was obviously the All Blacks versus South Africa.
Yeah.
But we said the big game is Italy. Italy is the one. The All Blacks, it'd be lovely to beat them. But the game we have to win is Italy. And again, Nick Mallett said it, the last comment in the post-match analysis, where, you know, it was like a post-match funeral, even though they were all trying to talk it up. And he said, "We've got to go out and smash Italy. Smash them up front, forwards, backs, running, taking the chances, coming up, you know, just show them and smash them and take them away." Because remember, they've played two easy games, but they've won two games. So they're two out of two at this stage. They're scoring tries, and they know that this is their big chance. So they've got a good grizzly pack of forwards. They've got Parise, who's a fantastic leader and player, and so it's not going to be easy. But I just wish we had used this opportunity to show we can do a little bit more than bash and crash and kick. But having said that, I think behind the scenes, the Springboks are actually going to be very disappointed.
Mm.
I think they lost to New Zealand, and this game was so poor. We got rid of it. And I think now the whole message will be, this is now, we owe the country a game. We owe the country a game. And so I want to see us take it to them. Yes, play our structured game early on, put them under pressure, kick a few penalties or whatever. I mean, I'm thinking now as I'm talking to you, there was one stage late in the game where we won the best turnover of the match. We had a 4-2 overlap on the left and we kicked the ball away. Do you remember?
We kicked it away.
How can you do that?
Yeah.
Surely all the pressure you put on is to build situations like that.
Yeah.
If you can't A, see them, and you can't B, run them in, then there's something wrong with you. But I was disappointed. But I'm looking forward to the Italy game. I mean, we're still there. As Rassi says, you have the New Zealanders in your group. The chances are you're going to win one. You're going to lose that particular game.
Yeah.
It's nice to see the bonus point. And bonus points are very, very interesting. It was amazing to see the Irish fly half, Joey Carberry, who was a New Zealand schoolboy. Can you believe it? His family moved to Ireland. And Joe Schmidt realized he was there and turned him into a professional player. He wasn't even a professional player.
Wow.
And he booted that ball into touch and everyone slammed him. But, of course, what he was doing was protecting the bonus point. Had they tried to run 90 meters up the field, they might have given a penalty away, lost it, and lost that bonus point. So, in fact, it was a very, very clever move. And, you know, bonus points are not just for getting through. They're maybe getting first or second and working out who you play the next time around. So, World Cup terrific. And that Japanese game has just set it off. And even the Wales-Australian
I was
game,
about to talk about that, yeah.
Goodness me, that was terrific. I thought the first half was great. Wales were in it. And of course, the drop goal in the first minute. And Patchell dropped a goal later on.
Yeah,
drop goals aside, luckily that's something where we're fairly well organized. But that game was magnificent to me, and it was interesting. Despite it was two top games, there was very little of the aimless up and under kicking.
Yeah,
there were some up and under kicks, but the players moved the ball, they straightened, they put guys away, and in the end, I think Australia were unlucky to lose. The refereeing side of things, well, Michael Checker always blames, in fact, he blames everybody except himself and the Australians.
That's how he keeps his job, John Robbie.
That's a lovely guy. I know of him. I've had a few beers with him. He's a lovely, lovely guy.
Yeah.
But the refereeing, the funny thing is that everyone's going on about the high tackles and the high tackles and this, that, and the other. I think the offside lines are far more important, given the way that the rush defences are coming up and taking all that space. And here, you've got to have the linesman coming in. That's the linesman's job to pick that up.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I was reading an article where a top referee, a guy called Smith, who's just retired fairly recently, and he said, in fact, in rugby, the linesmen are not encouraged. Sorry, the assistant referees are not encouraged to have too many interventions.
Mm.
4 or 5 per half. And that's because, obviously, they don't want to take away the supremacy of the referee and the sporting, the referee is the sole judge of fact and all that. But I think if they want to get things right, they should be encouraged. And maybe it gets to a stage where you don't have a referee and 2 assistants. You actually have 3 referees with equal authority working in tandem. I can see that happening, but obviously it's not going to happen at this World Cup.
John Robbie, so much to talk about at this World Cup, and that's because it has really brought the goods. But we're going to leave it here for tonight. Thank you so much for your time.
Must we?
I know.
Stay on.
We don't need anyone else for the rest of the show. We've got John Robbie.
It is absolutely fantastic. Great to talk to you, and I look forward to chatting to you before the Italian game during the week.
Absolutely. John Robbie, the legendary broadcaster, but not only that, a legendary rugby player himself, represented the Springboks twice. Non-official, but he did, as well as Ireland, and it is always a pleasure to have him on the show.